Hello, my name is Scott Bradley and this is Scott's Co-op Podcast. Today I'm joined by former Rangers manager Mark Warburton. We discuss the SPFL title race and what it's like being a Rangers manager in the build-up to an Old Firm game, James Tavernier being linked with a move to Saudi Arabia, David Moyes leaving West Ham at the end of the season, and the current state of Manchester United Football Club. All this and so much more. Enjoy the show. So Mark, we'll just dive right into it, and there's been a lot of twists and turns this season in the SPFL title race. Since we last spoke, Rangers were the favourites. Now the tide has turned. What do you make of it all?
As you rightly say, Scott, the last time we spoke, I thought Rangers were looking strong, had good momentum. The belief of the fan base was clearly there and they're in a great position. But simple fact of the matter is, it's Rangers v Celtic. After the pulsating draw, it's the points against Ross County dropped and the 2 points against Dundee, which are currently given Celtic the edge. And it's been so tight. When you look at, you know, the 8 points they were behind, Celtic dropped points. Rangers had a great run under Philippe and the boys did exceptionally well. But you just kind of thought to drop points at important stages of the season. And that's been the case in those two games. So all you can hope for now is that Celtic find it tough to go to Rugby Park, as we spoke about, and the difficult surface, and they've shown a vulnerability there. And you hope that Rangers can have convincing wins in the next two games and sets it all up.
Mark, you're managing four Old Firm games and you've beaten Celtic before. What's the pressure like as a manager in the build-up to one of these games?
It's just an immediate understanding, Scott, of what's involved, of the significance of the game. And I say this, you know, I'm saying it very respectfully, outside of Glasgow, we know it's a worldwide famous derby, globally recognised as one of the biggest derbies. There's no doubt about that. But I think there's an ignorance down south, for example, of how big that game is. They don't understand it. I was at Nottingham Forest. I think I might have told you. I apologise if I have. And the boys were in the game and on the Forest in the players' room before the game and having the pre-match and whatever else. And there's a 12:30 kickoff the Old Firm or 12 o'clock kickoff the Old Firm. And I said, "Were you watching the game, boys?" And it was a what game? There was a lack of understanding, lack of appreciation of the size and scale of the game. And it's not until players such as Todd Cantwell and Tom Lawrence, he said, to go into that game that they appreciate how big they are. So you have to understand the expectations, Scott. You have to appreciate what it means to so many people locally and globally. And you have to make sure your team are best prepared.
And then what's your thoughts on Brendan Rodgers' comments from last week where he said that Celtic will be having a bit of fun going into the Old Firm game on Saturday?
I haven't heard the interview. So I'll be honest to Brendan. Brendan's someone I've got a lot of respect for, obviously, in terms of I've known him for a long time now. I left the city, Brendan was a Chelsea youth team coach. And I went in with a friend of mine to see Brendan work. This was many, many years ago. So I haven't seen the context of the comments, Scott. So it'd be unfair of me to comment. But I mean, I'm sure there's nothing derogatory. He wouldn't be that naive to give any sort of boost to Rangers, that's for sure.
And if Rangers were to end up with a League Cup and a Scottish Cup, Mark, considering the position they were in back in October, do you think that would be still considered as a successful season?
It's silverware, right? So, you know, Rangers are all about getting back up to the divisions, go back a few years, getting back up the divisions, getting their place at the top of Scottish football, into the European leagues, etc. Now, they've shown with their European performances the last couple of years what they can do, what they can achieve, how they can compete. So there's one box being ticked. There's no doubt it's winning the title. The Rangers fans want to be top of the Scottish table, simple as that. But there's, you know, you're still winning silverware, Scott, so never underestimate that. And Philippe and his staff and the players deserve enormous credit for that. But I think the frustration will be having got to that point where it was under their control, the frustration of dropping, I'm saying stupid points, but no disrespect to Ross County, Dundee, but Rangers would have expected to win those games.
And James Tavernier's been linked with a move to Saudi. What's your thoughts on that?
I can't speak for Tav. I mean, I got into a heated debate, shall we say, on a media outlet because someone asked me that very question, not about Tav, but about the greed of players going. And it was under the entitlement of, under the title of, how much money do you need? That was a sort of like the question mark. And the inference, the suggestion, Scott, was that players are just getting greedy. But it's a bit like and I compared it to the LIV Golf. Now, someone like Brooks Koepka, you know, is a wealthy guy, won majors, sponsors, you know, he's a very wealthy guy. You won't have to worry about meat on the table come Sunday in the Koepka household. But if you get offered something like 250, 300, 400 million, whatever him, John Rahm are being offered, what man would turn it down? Yeah. What would, you know, who would turn down that sort of money? So If a player, I'm not using Tav, but if a player is on X a week and is offered 10 times X to go and play in Saudi, tax-free, what do you do? What do you do? And while there be criticism of any player and greed and all this hunger for losing your passion for the game and just chasing the money, I can't think of too many supporters, Scott, who would turn down that type of offer.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, I would love to have you to stay. But if he does go to Saudi Arabia, I would totally understand it because that's just life-changing money, Mark.
It is life-changing money. And it's not, someone said to me, I won't say who, a good friend of mine, Premier League manager, said to me that, you know, when you're getting paid in the Premier League, you're looking after the welfare of your grandchildren's grandkids. That's what you're doing. Literally, you are safeguarding the future of your family for, you know, some decades to come, such is the money. Now, Tav, as I'm sure you'd agree, Scott, has already secured legendary status at the club in what he's achieved and what he's done and how good he's been for Rangers Football Club. I don't know what Tav's going to do, but whatever you do, I hope that every Rangers fan wish him the best. Hopefully, if he stays and carries on winning titles for Rangers, fantastic. If he decides to go to somewhere else, well, then, again, you'd like to think he goes with everyone's best wishes because you want him to make good decisions.
Oh, yeah, because Davinier's been a fantastic servant for Rangers, Mark. And if he was to go, it would be a massive blow. And he will be a player that will be very difficult to replace because the numbers, as you and I have spoken about many times, the numbers he gets for a right-back aren't normal. Like, he's our top goal scorer this season with 24 goals. It's like, it's absolutely insane.
It is, and it's, you know, if people will easily, people who will want to attack those stats, Scott, will talk about, one, Rangers will dominate with Celtic, the football. You know, they'll have 70% possession in 90 in all the games apart from Celtic. He was never tested 1v1, penalties, a lot of them. But A, he's taken penalties in high-pressure games, Celtic and Europe. He's delivered on crosses and quality of ball in, you know, game after game after game. And his level of consistency has been outstanding. And he's done all of that while captaining the team, you know, getting new players coming in, mentoring the new players, helping the manager, etc. So he deserves so much credit. And he's done all of that with a smile on his face. I'm saying that not in a light-hearted way. He plays with a smile on his face. He enjoys the responsibility of captaining a club like Rangers. I can't speak high enough about him.
Oh no, and see, one thing it does frustrate me, Mark, with that people try to label him as a penalty merchant, right? Of course, a majority of his goals this season are penalties, but people seem to forget, right? It takes a lot of skill to be that consistently good with penalties. And as you were saying as well, the pressure to be that good as well, taking penalties week in, week out and scoring them, it says a lot about how mentally strong and good Tavernier is.
He is mentally strong and he'll miss as well. Tav will miss. I said to you before, it wasn't long ago last season when he had a little bad run, I think, of performances, and suddenly the press jump on him straight away. And then people are desperate to see people who do well fail. They're desperate to see them have a bad patch and jump all over it like a rash. The fact is, he's consistent. He's been a magnificent performer week in, week out for Rangers and deserves nothing but credit. So to be top goal scorer here, and I think he's an athlete, Scott. So he's got, there's plenty of it, of stuff left in the tank for Tav. They have no doubt about that. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, and obviously you mentioned about him being like an athlete. Like, he's a proper one as well because he's rarely injured. I think the longest period of time he was actually out injured was probably about 2-3 weeks or something. Like, he's always fit, and especially at the age of 32. It's brilliant.
I hope you're touching wood while you're saying this, Scott.
Yeah, because
I never wanted to tempt fate with players like that, but his availability, his pitch minutes, his training availability were staggering. When David Weir and I were there, and Jim Stewart and that, I can't recall Tav ever missing training. I think a couple of times we had to pull him out just to rest him a little bit because the games are coming thick and fast. But he's got an amazing availability. You know, he looks after himself. He trains well. He eats well, rests well. He does everything right that a good pro has to do. And they do, at the level of the game they're playing at and the consistency of the quality that he's delivering, Scott, you've got to look after yourself. You know, that doesn't happen by chance. So, again, enormous credit is earned by Tav.
And so what's your prediction for the Old Firm on Saturday, Mark?
I fancy a shock. I do. I'm going to say that. What am I going to say? But for obvious, Pete is going to say, well, what else would he say? But I think the Rangers coming back of the Kilmarnock game, I think the expectation now and the belief has shifted from the blue side to the green side since we last spoke. The Celtic crowd, I'm sure, will be very, very expectant. They're in a good position. They know what the win here would do in terms of goal difference and points difference. So I think suddenly the barometer switches, and I think Rangers can take advantage of that. So I've, you know, if, I'm not allowed to bet, but I was certainly, I think for me, I think Rangers have a very strong chance of going there and upsetting the odds, because they go into the game having rediscovered the goal scoring touch after the Dundee 0-0 and the, you know, Ross County, etc. And I think now they go in that game and I think they can really surprise Celtic. And that's what I want to happen.
And we'll move on to West Ham now. And David Moyes will be departing West Ham at the end of the season. Do you think this is the right move for both parties?
Is it the right move for David? I think he's such an experienced manager. I think he's got a CV that, you know, when you've got Man United on your CV and what he's done at Everton for 10, 11 years and whatever else and what he's achieved in terms of West Ham, etc., he deserves enormous respect. Is it right? If he asked me, I would say yes. I think probably is in terms of him, because I think a lot of the abuse he's received, comments he's received have been totally out of order, totally disrespectful. I've been very disappointed, if I'm honest, at the manner of how this has been handled, because I think he deserves so much more than that. It hasn't been right, being leaked. I'm reading every day about managers being interviewed, and who knows the truth, Scott? You know, unless you're actually right in the middle of it all, you don't know the truth. But all I do know is that someone of that standing and having brought the trophy to the club and what he's done in terms of steadying the ship, I think he deserves to be treated as an ultimate professional, and I have been disappointed in certain aspects for him, disappointed for him in the way it's gone. So I hope very much that the game against Luton on Saturday, that the fans can give him the send-off that he undoubtedly deserves, that's for sure, and that he will prepare the team for Luton and then prepare the team for Man City, and have no doubt any fans thinking, oh, he won't be, you go to Man City and it'll be a walkover, there's no chance of David Moyes ever doing that. So, you know, he deserves enormous respect. I hope very much, as I say, he gets a send-off he absolutely deserves.
And West Ham have had some heavy away defeats this season. And Moyes said the other day that's mainly because of Declan Rice. Obviously, he's been a big loss, but obviously, would you agree with what Moyes said there?
Declan's a world-class player. He's not a great player. He's a world-class player. You know, he's shown that with Arsenal. You've seen he's had an attacking element to his game. You look at the physical aspect of his game, he can run all day. He's a great stride, great change of pace, great acceleration. He can get away. The goal he scored the other day, you know, getting from box to box, etc., and then the finesse to finish it. There's no doubt someone like Declan, who reads the game so well, he can be that defensive screen in front of the back four or back three. He's got that capability. He reads it. He covers space. He fills holes, then becomes available on a transition. But there's no doubt you lose a player of that quality. You can't replace it. When you go for 100 million plus, there's a reason why you do. Alvarez and these boys coming in, Thomas Suchet, obviously these are international players, Scott, but you're still trying to fill a void of a world-class player. And that's been the problem. I think they've struggled with filling that void, but I think they've also struggled with in terms of centre-half and injuries to Naif Agard. And then, you know, Kurt's had some injury issues and he's dealing with that. Some weeks available, some weeks not. And I think David has built his teams on a solid, you know, defensive partnership, and that's not been available to him. So whether it's been Angelo Bonner coming in, or whether it's been Agard coming in, or Ben Johnson coming in, or Mavropanos coming in, it's been that lack of consistency. And if you look at the best defences, you need to have that defensive consistency all the time.
And I just want to touch on Manchester United right now. Obviously, recently they've been in horrendous form. And obviously, I imagine you watched the Crystal Palace game on Monday. They were lucky it was only 4-0. That was going on 7 or 8. In your opinion, Mark, why do you think it's been so badly for Manchester United this season?
I'm never going to be disrespectful to managers, Scott. You know that, ever, with the comments. And the people who manage a club of the stature of Man United, you're a very, very good manager stroke coach to get to that level. Have no doubt about that. I watched that game. I watched it because of Abiche Eze, and I like it watching Eze with Elise. I love the dynamism and the cleverness of that partnership, and with Matata up top, etc. They really are good to watch. I think they've suffered with an appalling injury crisis as well. Look at the likes of Newcastle, and you look at when you've got Casemiro playing centre-half, it tells you that even a club within that stature of that, I would question the recruitment. Absolutely. I think I've said that before. Again, I'm not being disrespectful to a manager. I'm not being disrespectful to any senior recruitment people. But you would look at it and go, West Ham get kudos for half the fee that Anthony, for example. And fans are naturally going to question that. Fans are going to say, why haven't we got strength in depth? Why are we playing it? You know, Wan-Bissaka playing left or right? You know, you look at it and you say, Maino midfield, you know, has come through and been a revelation. Garnacho's developed over the course of the season. Still a lot to do, but I think he's obviously developed the course of the season. You look at Darlow and you say he's probably been one of their better performers throughout the season, but Shaw being injured, Maguire now being injured, and Maguire, bear in mind, they wanted him out. He's held the back four together for the last... He's been fantastic for them, great for Gareth Southgate, but it just shows you about rash decision-making. So I just think they've suffered from an appalling injury crisis. They've suffered from a loss of form. The likes of Rashford, who last year got X amount of goals, and this year's a fraction of the goal return. I think it's a combination of factors, a lack of confidence, expectation weighs heavily, dissatisfaction, new ownership in the background, all of these factors. Whatever you say, don't doubt that Erik ten Hag is a top quality coach. Don't doubt that. But I think there's so many factors there, Scott, which are making that job so very, very difficult. You will rightly say, and supporters will say, well, that's what you get paid for. But when you look at Newcastle, I mean, I could reel off to you last year, when we were with West Ham, you could literally sit there and go, Trippier, Shaw, Botman, you know, you go through it, Burn, it's going to be, go through the midfield, get Mesh in midfield and Joe Linton, and you got this, and you reeled off Wilson and Almiron. You knew the team. And this year, losing Pope, and then you look at the defensive issues Eddie Howe's had to deal with and how it can impact Newcastle and all these teams. So the bigger question is, why so many injuries? That's obviously a completely different discussion. Why so many injuries? Why so many hamstrings affecting it? Why so many surgeries? Suddenly, you know, I think hamstrings up 90-odd%. Unbelievable number, Scott. But I think, and in answer to your question, they've certainly suffered, Man U, from a combination of factors, and the club certainly needs something. Jim Ratcliffe, I'm sure, and Dave Brailsford, and if it is Dan Ashworth, etc., not being rude or disrespectful, if it is Dan, they will go in there and certainly mix things up. I thought it was interesting, as an interested sports, you know, football lover, the email that Jim Ratcliffe sent out last week, I thought that was really interesting, to say that he was appalled at the state of certain areas of the training ground, the IT room, I think he mentioned as being an absolute disgrace. He mentioned the 18s and 21s as not being much better. I think that was that for me is telling you exactly what's going to happen at Man United. I think it'll be good for the club, obviously, the standards that Sir Alex had, etc. But I think Sir Jim Ratcliffe is starting to lay down the law there. And quite rightly, when you invest that much money, I have no doubt he will make that club a huge success.
And I was going to ask you, Matt, what do you make of the media coverage that Ten Hag has been getting? Because the media, well, especially English media, they're not holding back with their criticism of Ten Hag. But what do you make of it?
Well, it's Man United, right? So you've got a championship. I'm saying a championship. You've got a Premier League race, you know, Premier League championship title, and you talk about Liverpool falling away. You talk about City and Arsenal and being neck and neck. You talk about Arteta. You talk about the consistency of Guardiola having been there at the final run, the race to the finishing line. There's no talk about Man United. You know, you see City deliver performance. Haaland scoring another clutch of goals. You see Arsenal dispatch teams for fun and scoring goals. Goals coming from Odegaard, from Saka, from Rice, from all over the Havertz, all over the park. And then you're seeing Crystal Palace beat Man U 4-0. And as you rightly say, it could have been more. So I think the football writers are quite, they need content, they need highlights. You know, they're gonna be quite ruthless. Bear in mind, they're not as ruthless as a Scottish journalist, Scott. So don't worry about that. But I just think that Man United are in turmoil at the moment in terms of that. And the writers are going to naturally highlight it. And there's been a lot of classy writing as well. There's been a lot of sympathetic understanding about the injury crisis and what facing it and the ownership and struggles that Ten Hag's had to deal with. But quite rightly, when you go into a shot, what can I say? When you manage clubs like United and Liverpool and Madrid and Barcelona and Bayern Munich, when you manage clubs of this stature and other major clubs, then you're going to come under scrutiny, Scott. When you're doing well, you're flying. You're almighty. When you struggle, then be ready for what comes your way.
And Marcus Rashford, Mark, he was unbelievable last season, right, for Manchester United. But this season, he just looks like a shell of his former self. And obviously you're a manager and you're looking in, right? Why do you think that is? Why do you think his form has been so poor this season?
There can be many factors, Scott, that we don't, you and I are not privy to. You know, that maybe the inner circle at Man United are aware. There could be off the field domestic issues that he's dealing with. We just don't know. Players have dips in forms, you know. Form is temporary, class is permanent, etc. So you know he's an outstanding player. You know what he can do. He can destroy defenders. He has pace and eye for goal and technique, etc. But it could just be a combination of factors. It could be dissatisfaction with a role. It could be, you know, he could be carrying an injury and having to play and get through. We just don't, you and I don't know. We're not privy to the information. But don't doubt his quality. Don't doubt his class. But there's no doubt that Man United have missed his goals. I mean, I'm not sure what he's on now, but compared to last year, is literally a fraction of the goals. So, you know, it's certainly been a big miss for them.
And it does look like Aston Villa are going to secure fourth spot. With Spurs looking likely, they'll finish either fifth or sixth. How do you think Ange's first season in the Premier League has went?
Well, listen, I'm born in North London, Tottenham, right? So, you know, I'm a Spurs fan. My son's a diehard Spurs fan. I'm just a less of a diehard, put it that way. But I think there's been a lot of excitement. I think he deserves so much credit for the way he's come into the club and being brave. I thought it was interesting hearing a lot of supporters speak, a lot of friends of mine who are Spurs or West Ham or whatever they are, talking about Ange showing his anger on the touchline and wanting his players to be brave. And you saw that improvement the other night, and it petered away. But I think he's stamping a style on the club. He's being very brave in how he wants the team to play. He's been consistent in how he wants the team to play. I think there's no doubt they'll have a busy summer of recruitment. I can see 3, 4, 5 new players coming into that squad and some guys leaving, because he wants to be very, very assertive in the style of play that he delivers for a very expectant Spurs fan base, Scott. So I think he deserves a lot of credit, Ange. I think he's come across really well in the media, and I think he can take the club forward where they need to get to.
And obviously you mentioned about Ange coming across well in the media. He is quite blunt with the media at times, isn't he?
He is, yeah, but he's on it. He's what I don't like with people. If you're going to be an ass all the time. You know, if you're going to be a nice guy, be a nice guy. Don't just be this hot and cold. You know, I don't like that. Of course, there's going to be mood swings on defeats or victories. I get that. But don't be a completely different character. And I just think he's shown the fact that he can be blunt. He can have a good sense of humour. You know, he loves the game and he's being very consistent in what he wants out of his players and he wants to deliver to the fan base. So I think, as there's nothing, forget the Celtic Rangers, there's nothing to do with that. He's come down to England, taken over a big job, and he's done really well so far.
Who would be your Premier League manager of the year, your player of the year and your young player of the year?
Oh, Premier League manager of the year.
I put you in the spot here.
Yeah, you have. Manager of the year, you could be bigger scope and say, well, if Luton survive, Rob Edwards could come into that category with what he's had to deal with. He said you could say that. You could look at it and say, for example, well, obviously, whoever wins the Premier League title would be Arteta or Pep Guardiola. Because again, Pep, the consistency and the ability to continually galvanise a squad of that stature is remarkable. And then Mikel Arteta, for the way they have recruited at Arsenal, the likes of Declan and Kai Havertz, bold. Kai Havertz at 60 million, there's a lot of media mocking that transfer. And he's now shown, Scott, what he can do for us and what he can deliver. So I would say, if I had to give it, it's going to kill my Spurs fans, but I think Mikel Arteta deserves a lot for the way that he's responded to last year when they fell away the last 7 or 8 games, how there's an obvious improvement. And I think he deserves enormous credit for that. So I think I'd put him right up there. In terms of the Premier League Player of the Year, I think, why is Mikel Arteta up there? It's the change in the Arsenal team. And this sounds a bit biased, but I would say Declan Rice is probably the Premier League Player of the Year in terms of his immediate impact on Arsenal, his ability to deal with new formations, new ideas, new role, more attacking role, when to go, when to stay, when to cover, etc. So, again, obviously having the privilege of working with Dec, but he would be right up there for me. And the young player, that's an interesting one. I think Cole Palmer.
I agree, yeah.
I think Cole Palmer, I've been lucky to watch a number of Chelsea games live for media this season. And he really has been the standout performer, Scott. And I saw, you know, going go back all right through this season, I've seen some of the games, and he really has literally been the best player on the pitch. And I used to comment saying, well, his best position is when he comes inside. So they put him out on the right flank sometimes, you're not getting the best. And the problem is Foden falls in that category, coming inside, etc. You've got Saka that plays wide right. So where are you going to play Palmer? You've got Palmer, Foden, Saka, Grealish. No one's mentioning Mason Mount, who 2 years ago in the Euro final was a vital part of the England squad, moved for 70 million, and no one's even mentioning him. So, there's a Maddison, another player. So there's a number of players, but I think Cole Palmer for me would be the young player of the year.
And in terms of obviously the league title, to be honest, Mark, I can't see past Man City. I don't see them losing another game. I don't see them dropping points at all. Would you agree with that assessment? Because Man City are just they're just ruthless. Like they're, in my opinion, they're the best team in the world.
They are the best team in the world. How Real Madrid got by them is one of those games. Pep was very magnanimous in defeat, but he'll be equally scratching his head, saying, how on earth did we not get past Real Madrid? But to be able to galvanize that squad, I do think, and this sounds a little bit bizarre, but I think the injuries that De Bruyne had out for a long period of time and Haaland, etc., have kept them fresh. They've come back fresh, and you can see Haaland now and De Bruyne and the energy and. All credit to Pep for the way he eased them back in. De Bruyne was off the bench and playing some games, coming off after an hour or 45, and I thought he was managed superbly well. But they've been there, they've done it. They've got people who are hungry. They'll be disappointed not winning the Champions League, but I think the hunger's definitely there. But they've also shown this season, not in the final stages, Scott, they've shown that they can drop points. And it's some of these games have been tight. So, do I expect them to win? Yes. Do I think Arsenal are going to chase them down to the very last kick? Yes. And it might just come down to a mistake or refereeing decision. You never know. But right now, if you had to put money on one team, you can't go against City.
And obviously the Euros are coming up next month. Mark, so see if Gareth Southgate fails to win the Euros, do you think that'll be his last tournament?
I don't know. I just think he's done a magnificent job for England. I think the consistency that he's delivered, the environment that he's created for the players, Scott, has been first class. I think the way he conducts himself in media and with Steve Holland, I think again first class. The staff he has around, the likes of Paul Nevin, again, I work with Paul at West Ham, and enormous respect for Paul and his abilities, set piece and everything else, his coaching skills. So I think he's really done well for England. Are we in a position to win the Euros? Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got an unbelievable squad of players. So he will know that. But we also know, look at Man City, Real Madrid, how Man City could have won by five. Somehow Real Madrid win on pen to get through. And you go, how did that just happen? And that can happen at the highest level. And it's a mistake. You think of the fine margins at the highest levels. So I don't know what he'd do. I think Gareth deserves to do what Gareth wants to do. I think he's earned that right. I think I know the immense pride he would obviously feel managing England. I hope very much he can go and deliver it, and then he has a choice whether he leaves on a high or whether he decides to stay for the World Cup. Either way, Gareth Southgate's a very impressive coach and individual.
And obviously, last time we spoke, Mark, you said that you're wanting to get back in the game as soon as possible with the right offer that comes your way. If you don't mind me asking, you don't need to say who, but you had any interesting offers come your way?
No, it's been difficult. I'll be very honest with you, Scott. You get to one or two inquiries, and they've got to be right. They've got to be right. I've been very lucky to manage some of the clubs I've managed, and this sounds arrogant. I'm not being arrogant. I've got promotions, I've got playoffs, I've got cup finals and stuff on my CV. I've been a technical director, I've been an academy director, I've been a manager for over 400 games, and I'm very comfortable with my CV. It's hard. It's hard because I think the game is changing, and I delivered a I was part of an LMA masterclass with coaches like Paul Heckingbottom, Jesse Marsh, Carlo Toure, etc. the other week, and there's a number of really good people there who are looking for work, and you realise it's the market environment right now, Scott, is tough. You can't bitch and moan about it. You have to find a solution to it, but you're not walking in. If David Moyes goes, I'm saying British guy, I'm not being rude to foreign guys, far from it. But the number of British guys are opening to reducing, reducing, reducing. Liam Messina left Hull yesterday. I don't know what they're going to do, Hull, in terms of a new manager. But the number of British coaches not working who have got impressive CVs is quite staggering. So you've got to find a way. So no, I'm very, very keen. I'm not good. You know, you sit there outside and I've got a golf shirt on, I've been at the driving range and you can say, oh, I lovely, enjoy that life. That's not for me, Scott. It is for some people, it's not for me.
Yeah, and obviously you're talking about a lot of British coaches being out of work. Came also, obviously, I know you're familiar with Billy Davis.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously, I spoke to Billy at numerous times, and he's been out of the game for about 10 years, right? And when you look at his CV, he's managed Nottingham Forest twice, got Derby County promoted in a freak season where there was a three-year plan, and then he got him promoted in the first season. And you look at his CV, how has a club not snapped someone like him up? He's been out of the game 10 years, which is staggering. So, yeah, it's like it is crazy how many talented British coaches like yourself as well that haven't got a managerial gig just yet.
It's difficult. It's difficult. And as I say, you can't sit there and you can't go, oh, this is awful, this is shocking, you know, the world hates me. You can't be that way, Scott. You just got to find a solution to it. You've got to be consistent. I think it's a real difficult one. There's things in my mind that I look at it and go, well, the role of technical directors is changing it. I think, you know, if you have a 42-year-old technical director, is he going to go and hire a 60-year-old, 58-year-old, 55-year-old, 65-year-old manager who may be vastly more experienced than he is? Is he? I'm not sure that's going to be the case. And I think that I'm not being negative, far from it. I'm just saying there's a trend in the game right now. And I think I always go back to the city, Scott. When I was in the city, if I'm in charge of a banking dealing desk and I hire you and you come in and make more money than me, I get a bonus for hiring you and probably get promoted for hiring you. In football, if that happens, they sack me and give you my job.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. That's the difference. And I think now that side of it is recognizing that seniority, experience, knowledge, etc., is a good thing. You know, you harness that and you make sure respect and relationships are developed. But I think too many times people are seen as a threat. That saddens me. That it shouldn't be the case. It should be you bring in knowledge, experience, etc., to make the club and the environment better. So yeah, you should put your head down. You keep doing what you have to do, and hopefully the right doors open up.
And then obviously, last question, Mark. Obviously, you did say to me before that you're willing to go abroad. Is that still the case?
Yeah, you have to. You have to look abroad. I think there's a reluctance, certainly in Europe, to get those jobs, language skills, and whatever else. But certainly, yeah, North America appeals. Absolutely, Scott. You have to look. You have to look to widen your boundaries. Otherwise, you have no chance at all.
Mark, pleasure as always. Thank you very much for coming on, mate.
Pleasure, Scott. Nice speaking to you. Good luck to the boys at the weekend.
Thank you very much for listening to the show. If you want to listen to more episodes of Scott Score, they're available on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud. Until next time, take care and we'll see you soon.